Hey everybody, it's Adam, live and in person for you. Hey everybody, it's Adam, wonder who he'll interview.
Hey everyone, it's Call Me Adam, and on this episode of Bearing It All with Call Me Adam, we are speaking with mentalist and magician Gary Farrar, live from the Oxbow Tavern in New York City. Hey Gary.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Very good.
Thank you for coming on the show. So I saw your show in June because you took the month of July off from the show here, but you were traveling around doing magic and mentalist things around the country.
Yep, that's true. Yeah.
So I'm thrilled that we were able to reconnect for this interview. One thing I love about your show is that is it okay if I call it a trick?
Sure. Yeah.
Every trick, every illusion you did, I felt was jaw-dropping. Wow. How did you do that? So my first question is, how did you decide to come up with this specific show, Nothing Here Is Real?
Well, it started about 4 years ago with some little ideas that I had for effects that were not as practical as what I have to do when I'm doing a hired gig, right? Because there are certain scenarios that are outside of my control, such as the environment, the lighting, and things like that. So this was just a little journal that I had of things that I'd have a weird idea and say, oh, it would be awesome if I could ever do this, but of course I can't right now. And eventually I suddenly had a full book of all these thoughts, and I said I really need to find a space and start to try out these methods, and I wanted to make it stuff that was not part of my working repertoire. So this is all new things that are new ideas that came up that I came up with in my head. It wasn't something that I saw somewhere and said, oh, I want to do that. You know, this is a very organic show. And I think that comes through when you kind of take the journey with me. It fits very well into the space, and it feels like a very natural experience.
Yes, I would agree with that. I mean, every inch of this space is used. It's in a private room in the basement of the Oxbow Tavern. I mean, so how did you find this space? And when you saw it, were you immediately like, yes, this is where my show needs to be?
I actually was. Yes, there had been a few other potential options, you know, as I was kind of getting more serious about this idea, and they were all like, I could see myself doing the show here, but I don't know. I'll ask them and see. And it never really kind of worked out. And then when I was actually hired to do a private event in this space, I instantly was like, oh, no, I'm glad everything else didn't work out, because this is the place. And fortunately for me, I reached out to Shannon, who is the general manager here, and said, you know, I happen to do an event in your downstairs space, and I think it would be the perfect fit for this concept that I'm developing. And thank goodness everybody here was on board. They said, yeah, we love this. We'll you know, run it as a trial thing and see how it goes. And now we're over half a year into it, and it's going really well. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I can attest to the fun because I saw it in June, and I do love this space. I mean, one of the things I love about New York City is some of the buildings with the exposed brick, and it's very old fashioned down here. When everyone listening to this podcast comes to the show, you will see how great it is down here.
Yeah, I'd love to say one thing about the space, which is that I feel like because it has the brick walls, it has the wood floor, everything feels dated and you know, older than if you go to a Broadway show, where you assume that, oh, any magic or mentalism show is going to have cameras and wires and trapdoors and that kind of a thing. I specifically like this space because it doesn't have that feel to it. And one of the things that I love about my private work is that I'm showing up kind of in someone's living room, or, you know, a place where they know that I have control over. And this environment felt the closest that I could get to that, where it really feels like it's happening so close, and everything else is so limiting, you know, that there's no way that I could be missing something. It has to be real.
Yes. I mean, I think with the audience limit is like 20.
It's a little more than that. Actually, when you were here, we were at like 40.
Oh, okay.
It's surprising because the venue makes it seem so intimate that you don't even realize that it is that many. But yeah, usually we're running around like 40 people at a show.
Wow. Well, it definitely feels like it's much more intimate than that. So it's terrific. How did you, so just to take our listeners on a little bit of your journey, how did you first get into magic and mentalist illusions?
Well, I started a little bit in middle school when most people pick it up a little bit and try some stuff out, and it didn't really stick with me. You know, my grandfather was an entertainer. He was a lion tamer. And so, you know, most of his life was a showman and promoted me a little bit. I did a few shows around that time period, and then it faded away. I got more serious into acting. I went to college for theater, and it was becoming honestly less and less of my life as I went along. And it was funny because when I graduated college, it was one of those things where, you know, there was one day, and that day changed my life, and I became a magician because of that day. I was hired to do an event with another actor, and she mentioned that she was playing guitar for pediatric units, and it was through this program that was sponsoring her visits, and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I know some magic. And I had a lot of downtime as a young actor in the city, as you might imagine. And so I started doing this program where I would get sponsored to go in and do some card tricks for kids in pediatric wards. And I started getting really good at doing it. And it was a great low pressure scenario to practice and try things out, you know, in the real world. You get to learn to interact with people and expect the unexpected from them, which in magic is a bit of a challenge because you need your structure for your effect. And I did this for about 5 years. And after 5 years, acting kind of started to fade away because I was much more interested in it, and I became a working magician. And then from there, I never really looked back.
That's amazing.
Until now, because this is the first time where I really do get to kind of take the magic and really embrace the theatrical element of it, because I do control, unlike at paid gigs, I get to control every aspect of the experience. You know, the music, I can tell some stories, take some moments to make the show more emotional and more of a storytelling journey than just here's a trick, here's a trick, here's a trick.
Yes. I remember when I was here, I mean, you had someone read a script. And I mean, it was just incredible how that all came together. I'm not going to say because I don't want to give it away, but it's incredible. And there is a pool table here, and I was actually part of that trick where you're playing pool. And I mean, the end result of that was just like, I have no idea how you made it happen. And that's what I think makes this show so great, is that, I mean, like I said earlier, every trick I was just amazed at how the end result ended in whatever answer you wanted it to be. That's what it came to be, and that's what makes you such an incredible musician. Magician.
Oh, wait. You don't know? You haven't heard? You must not be subscribed to the Call Me Adam Digest. When you sign up for the Call Me Adam Digest, you are the first to know. You get a front row seat to my interviews and podcast episodes, where you get to discover new things about your favorite celebrities. You get personal stories from the other side of the microphone that you wouldn't know by just reading, watching, or listening to my interviews. We get to have a weekly connection, and you can add some fun to your weekend. So come take a peek behind the curtain with the Call Me Adam Digest. Sign up today at callmeadam.com. Can't wait to see you there.
Yeah. I can comment a little bit on that, which is one of the things that makes this show so exhausting for me. I have my structure, and then I open myself up and let the show kind of run its course. And so I'm very responsive to the audience. I can attest that the show is not the same every time. There is a tremendous amount of audience interaction. In the show that you saw, you happened to raise your hand because I asked a random question, and I didn't choose you. You chose yourself by raising your hand for that. And little did you know that that leads you to essentially finish act one of the show,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Based on your decisions. And every time we run that show, it's whoever raises their hand, you know, and I don't get any say really, because I want it to feel organic. And the only way it can is if I turn myself over to the show. And not only does it then feel organic, but you have a genuine reaction that you wouldn't necessarily have if, you know, we had talked beforehand and I had said, "Ooh, I might bring you up to the pool table," you know, and even if we didn't plan things out in advance, if I was to say, "Just to give you a heads up, you know, I was wondering if you play pool, if you have experience," I'd much rather have that happen on the fly in the moment and let people discover things about themselves and have honest realizations and revelations, because people can read that and then experience that with this person.
Yes. Yes. I mean, I feel like it's that spontaneity that's with so many of the tricks. I mean, even though obviously you have them planned because they have to land, but the way you present it and the way it comes off is that it is spontaneous. I mean, with your help, it's spontaneous.
That's a very good point. And it's interesting because this show, In the world of magic, the show is relatively new, mm-hmm. right? If you think about how long it takes to get good at an effect and to really, like, you know, real world test it with people that you don't know, it's still a relatively young show. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that you mentioned that improvisational element, because it's one thing that I normally pride myself on. And it's one thing that in the beginning of this show, I didn't have the luxury of doing. Mm-hmm. I really just needed to make sure that everything landed.
Yeah.
So the script was the script. And if someone said something a little bit unexpected, I did my best to just stay on course, mm-hmm. to get from A to B to C to D. And now that I know the material a little bit better, I've learned all the things that can go wrong and how people behave in unexpected ways, I can free myself up a little bit to play with the audience more. And it's one of the things that I love in I know I keep contrasting between the show and my working magic, but it really is a completely different style and a different approach. In that kind of an atmosphere, that's what I love, is, you know, getting to work with the people. You know, the magic is fine, but I want it to be about the people and them having a good time and being able to engage and interact with them. And to now have this show at a point where we can go off on tangents and I don't have to panic. I know that we're always going to land where I want us to land. And the audience can appreciate the fact that we are flying by the seat of all of our collective pants. And it makes it that much more satisfying when it does land in where it needs to be.
Yes. 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 And I will agree with you that there's definitely parts of the show that you could tell were scripted, but you see how it also, once you're here, you easily see how you do go off script, and because every audience is different, so you never know who's gonna do what. And one thing we have to do in this interview is a trick.
Sure.
So why don't you set it up for us.
And ready. Okay. It's a quick setup. I don't like, you know, very prop heavy effects. But mentalism is a challenge. And I do mention this in the show as well, because of social media these days, you know, and especially in an environment where, you know, where in this interview, I could have known that this had been coming up for some time. I could have looked up things about you potentially and pretended to read your mind by finding information about you online. So, Adam, I'm going to ask you to do something, which is to think of a thought from pre-social media,
okay.
Something that involves a person And I would imagine this would be from your childhood, so that, you know, there's no way that I could have connected any dots or anything. So what I would like you to think about potentially is like an old best friend or a crush or, you know, something from like elementary school that there's no way that I could possibly know, something that you haven't really shared with too many people. And if you have a name in mind, just to lock it in, I'll have you write it here. But don't let me see. In fact, I'll hold the microphone and I can turn around. So. Now I'm in control of the podcast. I am looking away, and let me know when you've written that, and keep it face down so that when I turn back, I can't get a peek or anything. We're good?
Yeah.
Excellent. Good. You can put that on the rest of the stack, and hold the microphone.
The card was face down.
It is face
to
down.
Confirm.
Yes. And to be fair, I will keep my eyes averted the entire time, but people still don't trust me, which is to be fair. So could you, you have the microphone in, this is your right hand?
Yes.
Could you hold out your left hand as well? Yes. I'm gonna take the entire stack and place it like this with a thumb on the bottom and on the top. Good.
Okay.
Perfect. And why don't we, here, we'll put that on top too. We'll just make an entire stack so that it's guarded. I want you to think of the first person that came to mind. Focus on them. Think of a memory that you have of this person.
Okay.
Remember what they looked like. They probably don't look like that anymore. I don't know if this is someone who you're still in touch with or they're long gone, but focus on the first letter of this person's name, because
okay.
That's like the iconic letter. And if I can get that, then I can work from there. And would it be possible to think of, because if you think of a single letter, there's not much context
right.
to send it to me. So maybe something else, if there's like a color or a state or anything that starts with this letter. Can you come up with something?
Yes.
Okay. What is it? What kind of a context is it?
I'll go with a state.
A state. Okay.
Yeah.
Now this is more useful to me because there, you know, you have a framework for the state. Is it a state that you have been to before?
No.
Okay. Picture a map of the United States.
Okay.
If you were to visualize where this state was, could you do it?
Yes.
Okay, good. And that, to me, indicates that it's not one of those ones like real in the middle, because a lot of people
right.
don't know
right.
those. So that we've ruled out some.
Yes.
But picture a map.
Okay.
Good. Visualize where this state
uh-huh.
is. And I already get the sense, based on where we are, you know, if it's above, people tend to look up,
uh-huh.
which you didn't do, which makes me feel like this is kind of like in the lower part.
Yes.
Okay. And then from there, if you were to think of going to this state.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on the second letter of the state.
Okay.
This is just a guess, but is that an O?
Oh my God. Yes.
It is. Okay. Okay. So we've got a letter to work with. Okay. I don't know much about you. All I know is that you haven't been to this state, and there's probably a lot of states you haven't been
yes,
to.
Yes.
But if I was to just go for it, because we are on a podcast, we have limited time, I'm just going to say, are you thinking of Louisiana?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Go back to the person that you're thinking
okay.
about. Can you think about a letter towards the middle of the name?
Yes.
Okay. You went back and forth.
Well, I have to like spell the name.
You
in
had to
my
spell
head.
The name out. Yes, but that helps me.
Yes.
Because I saw like like some strange letters in there. Like, is there a Y?
Yes.
Okay, which is odd because I was talking about the middle of the name.
Uh-huh.
There's not many names that have a Y towards the middle.
Correct.
I would think maybe like Wyatt, but it wasn't Wyatt.
No.
No. Okay. So picture this memory that I asked you to think about
mm-hmm.
with this person.
Mm-hmm.
In your mind, visualize the person.
Yes.
Okay. This is a boy.
Yes.
And you call to him in your mind, but he starts to like leave. And so you call a little bit louder.
Okay.
Until you're almost screaming at him. And I can almost hear it. It's like Lloyd? Lloyd.
Yes.
Is it Lloyd?
Yes.
There you go.
Oh my God. That's incredible.
Thank you.
That's incredible. I mean, you would never know, because
right.
I mean, it was a childhood friend who lived around the corner, and the memory, it's like the weirdest memory that's ingrained in my mind about it. But it was at the time that Mariah Carey's first album came out, Vision of Love, and in those days, when you bought a CD, it was in it came in a huge box, yeah. And it had the album cover and on the box. And I just remember we opened the box and we took out the CD, and then we were just like looking at the box and looking at her picture, because we thought she was like the most beautiful person ever. And I mean, it's incredible how you got his name, right, from all of that.
From all that. And you know, the cool thing is that it allows you to also then have an experience, to think about something you haven't thought, yeah, about in a while. And that's the kind of thing that I like to bring into the show, like I said, where people can have like true, honest experiences, mm-hmm, about things. It makes it kind of really special.
Yeah, it does. And the way you pieced it all together is amazing. So well done.
Thank
well
you.
Done. I was wowed once again. So we're going to sort of switch gears a little bit and talk about some of your interests, but we're going to bring them back to magic. So I saw on your website that some things you like to do, you love hiking in the Midwest, you love skiing in Vermont, you love landscape photography and raising your son. So we're first going to start with landscape photography. So like on Bewitched, if you could transport yourself to any place you've taken a picture, where would you transport yourself to?
Do you remember watching your favorite celebrity being interviewed, but you could tell there was more to that interview than what was being shown? My name is Adam Rothenberg, and in the past 16 years, I have interviewed over 2,200 artists and celebrities. And I am here to tell you that yes, there is definitely more to the interviews you have watched, read, or listened to. In my debut book, Behind the Curtain, The Mistakes, Lessons Learned, and Triumphs of Interviewing Celebrities, I take you behind the scenes of what really happens during an interview, sharing the joys, the pitfalls, and the OMG moments. You can get your copy on Amazon or through my entertainment platform, callmeadam.com. You can get your very own autographed copy.
All right. Interestingly, I don't know the place. It was somewhere in Japan. Mm-hmm. I took a photo of a waterfall that was just on the side of the road. I don't know where exactly I was, but that photograph is currently the background of kind of everything, my computer, my screensaver, my TV, we were there in fall, and it was such a very, you know, unique trip. It's not every day you get to go to Japan. And while there are plenty of places in the U.S. that I love, there was something just about being there, and especially that shot that I took that is so serene that if ever I feel like I need to be grounded a little bit, that will do it for me. And I wish I knew where it was. I mean, there might be some geotag hidden in the data of that photo I could go back and find. But I also kind of like not knowing, mm-hmm, that it's just this thing that I bumped into. Oh,
yeah. Your other interest is raising your 5-year-old son. So how do you feel fatherhood has influenced your show or influenced your career direction?
Well, I do have to update my website because I now have a 1-year-old daughter as well. So yeah, thank you. So we do have our hands full at home. Yeah. It's certainly made me less of a planner. Mm-hmm. I used to be able to have an agenda for the day, and then at the end of the day, all those things would be ticked off their to-do boxes, and that never happens anymore. I don't even bother making lists anymore. So I think that's both a blessing and a curse, because it's been something that I've learned to embrace, mm-hmm, and now in my professional work it does kind of allow me to just say, you know what, like we're just going for it without a net, you know, mm-hmm, and kind of to have that confidence, and I have also learned to function on a lot less sleep, mm-hmm, which is actually quite useful, because with the, you know, the ways that I perform sometimes, you know, you would be surprised. I've been hired to do magic at 6 a.m,
oh, wow,
which you would not expect. I have been hired to perform magic at 3 a.m., which you wouldn't expect. And so occasionally there are gigs all over the clock, and it's good to be able to mitigate that and be flexible with your sleep. I used to be very, very demanding of the amount of hours that I sleep, and now I've somehow become accustomed to just going for it.
Well, you kind of have no choice with two kids. Yeah. It's like they rule now. Okay, so we're getting near to the end of the interview. And I always like to end my interviews with playing with the title of my show, Bearing It All with Call Me Adam. So if you were to bear it all and reveal something about yourself that you haven't told before, what would you share?
I have... okay, there's some options here. One thing that I don't usually share in magic kind of circumstances is that I am still intimately involved in theater. Mm-hmm. And I don't, it's not usually in my bio. I kind of keep it separate. But one of my passion projects, which is completely, I wouldn't say it's completely different, but I direct two productions a year for a local high school near me. I don't discuss that much because it does, to me, feel like such a completely different world. Mm-hmm. And I do it for the love of theater because it's a beautiful space and the kids are so energetic and we have a very nice equipment to work with, and really anything that I can imagine doing we can create over the course of a year. And I think one of the reasons I don't bring it up is because I do have this kind of battle in myself of the amount of time that takes away from what I could be doing with magic. And it usually does not conflict that much, you know, not that many people are looking for a magician, you know, during at 3 PM on a weekday. Right. So, you know, I can run rehearsals around my schedule, but I certainly do have to turn down occasional gigs because of commitments to that. And, you know, we have a show date, and so I have to be available for that. And so I do struggle with that because I always say, I could just not do this and just do a few more gigs. I just keep going back to the fact that I love theater, and I love not having the pressure of having to trick people, mm-hmm. you know, to just be able to create the environment.
That is all the time we have. So thank you very much for coming on the show. Everybody listening, get your tickets to Nothing Here Is Real, starring and written by and everything else, Gary Farrar. It plays once a month in New York City at Oxbow Tavern. The last Tuesday of every month is what it is. So I'll have the ticket link up on the website. You'll get your tickets. You'll come to this amazing show, and you'll be as wowed and dazzled as I am. Awesome. Thank you. Oh, and lastly, where can everybody find you on the social media?
Oh, sure. Yeah. If you go to Gary Farrar, FERRAR.com, that'll give you like the tickets to the show and everything. And you can get to my main website from there with all the, videos and everything you want to know about me.
He'll get the dirt and the scoop and the story, for he happens to be in the know. Just ask anybody who's Adam. Adam lives for the business of show. CallMeAdam.com.
Thanks for listening. For more Call Me Adam interviews, visit CallMeAdam.com and follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at CallMeAdamNYC.